Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Okay, we are 10 days to the draft, and the Bills have a not insignificant ninth overall pick to start things off next Thursday night. In Nashville, by the way, location for this year's draft. The draft, just one subject discussed today out at the stadium in the fieldhouse. As the players returned for workouts, Sal Capaccio was there. And Sal joins us now on the West Her Hotline. Hi, Sal.
Hi, guys.
What were you able to watch today?
About 15 minutes of players doing some ladder work with their feet, walking over hurdles, not jumping or running over them, and medicine ball, worked with the medicine ball. That was about it.
And did you write stuff down? Or what did you, like, how did you, when you
I filmed stuff. I put stuff on my Twitter.
Did you have a yellow legal pad with you? Notations about the elevation of certain players' kneecaps?
Don't you feel an obligation here, Sal, when given the privilege of watching that, to actually report on it? Don't you feel?
I mean, I guess I did in some way, which is I noted that LeSean McCoy was there. I noted that I did not see Derek Anderson, but I saw Josh Allen and Matt Barkley. So I think that's kind of reporting. I took a couple of pictures, one of the new hallway leading into the field house, which is attached to the brand new the training facility. That was pretty cool. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit of reporting in there.
So this is just basically workouts. There's no football type activities taking place here, right?
Correct. There are what they call dead ball activities allowed. If they did any of that, we were not able to watch. We were only out there for the 15 minutes, the media. And dead ball activities include basically quarterbacks are allowed to throw balls to their wide receivers, but nobody can be covering them. Not even like another wide receiver, like just acting like he's a DB. Nothing like that. Long snappers can snap a ball, but they can only snap it like into a net. They can't literally snap it to a kicker or a punter.
Okay. So maybe a little bit of what you have going on between quarterbacks and receivers. So I really should have given this long snapper into a net thing a little more air. Maybe not unlike what you see for a college player's pro day, a receiver or quarterback. They're just unguarded, just, you know, throwing against air.
Yep. That would be something like that. So, and like I said, we weren't able to watch that, so I couldn't tell you anything that even happened on that level, but that is allowed during this, what they call phase one. I heard you earlier, Bulldog. It's been called phase one since 2011, but I think more people are now up on the lingo, which kind of stinks because we're about to have a new CBA in the next few years, and they're going to change it to something else. So, but it has been phase one for a while, phase one, two, and three, but no, people just, I think finally after like, What would it be now? 8 years since the CBA, more people are finally catching on to what this is called. This is the first 2 weeks. Phase two is the next 3 weeks, and phase three is the final 4 weeks. It's a 9-week program.
I swear to God, if I'm sitting at a bar and somebody around me uses that term, I am drinking. I'm picking up their beer and drinking out of it.
You've been warned.
I'm eating your nachos. I am drinking your beer. If I catch you using phase one,
and I assume as you ramp into. Listen to the way I'm talking. As you get into phase two and phase three, the limitations change on what you can and can't do, I assume, or is that incorrect?
That is correct. That is correct. Okay. We basically start getting into...
They're only allowed to throw passes into basketball hoops.
Now you can have, like phase two, basically, you might have a guy covering, but there's no actual contact allowed.
Right.
There's no huddles still. Like, you can't have a full offense work together, things like that, until you get to, like, phase three. So, yeah, you start to amp it up a little bit. You start to get a little bit more involved on a lot of different levels.
And these are times of the year where teams like the Ravens come to mind have gotten in trouble for doing stuff that was too football-y during this time of the year, right?
And they that's right. And, you know, I don't know specifically if it was like now or during OTAs, which is part of phase three, by the way, stuff like that. But you're right. I mean, this is the time of year where if you get caught doing something you're not supposed to, that's when they can fine you. They can take away draft picks.
Right.
You know, even coaches, like, you can't have – Sean McDermott can't be on the field right now. He can't be on the field until phase two. He can be around his players when they're off the field, but the only coaches who can be on the field with the players right now are literally strength and conditioning coaches who have no other responsibility. So if you're, like, a strength and conditioning coach who helps out with the wide receivers, you can't really be out there. So it's just those people. And on top of that – you know, this all, by the way, comes from when they redid the CBA in 2011. The players wanted more kind of control and say over how often they were allowed to be and could be required to be doing off-season stuff. And this is why it all comes from that. Like, literally, they can only be at the facility for 4 hours a day right now. And out of that 4 hours, guys, only 2 hours can be specified by the team. The other two is up to them when they want to be there.
Sal Capaccio is on the Westler Hotline with us. His appearance is sponsored by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? It feels to me like we've wrung just about everything you can out of what it looked like out there today. How about what it sounded like? We had news conferences, right? Bean, McDermott, some players. Is there an overall theme here? Is there, like, a it's time to win kind of mantra emerging already this early, Sal? Like, what did it sound like?
I don't think that was as much today. I think today was more about, look, we got a lot of new guys here. Like, there's a lot that's got to happen between now and the end of July for everyone to kind of be on the same page. And, you know, I asked Sean McDermott about how tough that is and what kind of people you need in your building to make sure that happens, because, you know, there's has to be a point of a threshold that I think it would be different with everybody depending on what kind of people you have, that too many new faces could equal not being able to get to that point, right? Especially with these limitations. That's part of the challenge of these limitations is they don't get all these players every day. They're only here for certain times. It is voluntary. So by the time you get to July, have you been able to get everybody up to speed? Have they gotten to know one another, understand what each other's roles are, things like that? And that is, even Sean McDermott said, the challenge of now in this time of year getting into the summer and then by the end of July. And he talked about the team building aspect and the bonding aspect and the chemistry aspect and the getting to know each other and getting to love each other and all that kind of stuff.
How about being in the draft, Sal? What did you learn?
I thought he was good today. You know, he wasn't really super specific, and he's not going to be, but I liked what, you know, we got out of him as far as philosophies, the mechanics of what happens between now and the draft, which is, like, him and his staff do their own mock drafts. They're going to do that next Monday and Tuesday. He actually assigns different people in his department, you know, under him, different teams in the mock draft, and he'll give somebody else the Bills. He doesn't want the Bills. He wants to be an observer. And when that person chooses for the Bills, he's going to say, why did you do that? Because he said, even if it's a pick that I've never thought of or heard of or saw, I want to know why that person thinks we need to pick that player. And I think that's pretty cool that he wants to learn from that. And, you know, on top of that, it's trading up, trading down, the different scenarios, why you would do certain things, staying at number 9, taking the best player available. One of the quotes that's making the rounds today that people are debating is, and, you know, whether or not he is right in saying this, is he said he feels good that they don't have any, quote-unquote, glaring holes. Now, he said we still have needs, and, you know, there's things that we still want to add to, and we still have needs, but we don't have a glaring hole somewhere. And I think some people are thinking that he's wrong for saying that, and, you know, he's maybe blind to whatever hole that they feel, but I think he's meaning, like, last year we knew they needed a quarterback. They needed a middle linebacker. They're going into this draft, and really what they need more of is guys who can compete maybe for starting jobs, but not that one spot where we go, who the hell is going to play quarterback, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay. It doesn't mean anything to me. What's going to mean something to me is how they do. right? Mm-hmm. So not even in the draft, but in the season. That's what's going to matter here. Whether he thinks they're good at other positions or not, that's going to play itself out by how they do. Offensive line is kind of interesting for that to think about. Like free agency, we've talked about it. They went into free agency, wide receiver, offensive line. Like they did a lot to add personnel to their offense. And I guess that probably gives him the freedom to talk like, we don't have
glaring holes.
We don't have that because of those guys. Those, you know, the center and the receivers, those guys on offense.
Yeah. Where might Sal, you think, like if someone were to object to him phrasing it that way, we don't have glaring holes, where would the glaring hole be? Is it pass rusher? Is it someone to replace Kyle Williams on the interior line? Like where might that hole be?
If I took a look and said, though, it's the most glaring thing, like they really kind of need a starter here, I think it's tight end. I think tight end would be, I can't see Jason Kroom as like an every down type of tight end that you go into the season with and say, we're okay there, right? I mean, he's a nice player, he can catch the ball, but that would probably be it. But I would have pretty close after that, probably D-line, like, but I don't know how you want to. It's so weird to me there because they have actual players there on the D-line. Like, on the ends, they have Jerry Hughes and Shaq Lawson and Trent Murphy. But there's so many ifs, guys, right? I mean, if Shaq Lawson can continue having a nice, you know, season like he did last year and take that step, if Trent Murphy can stay healthy, if Jerry Hughes can still be what he is at the age of 31 going into contract year, you know, they do have some rotational pieces on the D-line, but that could very well be the one hole that they have. They don't, you know what they need? They need a penetrating D-lineman that Kyle was. I did the numbers the other day. I looked at the stats. Kyle Williams was the only interior defensive player last year on the line to even have a half a sack for the entire team, and he had five of them. So, yeah, I think that could be one. To me, it would either be there or tight end.
With Sal Capaccio, how about running back? So I've heard at least once, going back, Bean made reference to, like, he just sort of half jokes about how their running backs are old. And, like, the one time he had a press conference where he said, I'm trying to get somebody older or something. Like, he made a reference to it. And wasn't there today something else like that? Like, what did he say about running backs today?
He was asked today, given the age of the running backs on the roster, do you need to draft a running back in this draft? And he said, no. He started with the answer, no. And then he said, I understand the question, basically why you're asking it, but we don't need to, you know, with the emphasis on need. Yes, you know, could we still add to the spot? Are you always looking to add, create competition, you know, get younger, whatever? Sure. But he doesn't feel the need to have to go out and do that.
And how do you feel about that?
I mean, I think they need to get younger at running back at some point, but I don't have to have it right now here in April for 2019. As I've said many times with you guys, I think the NFL has become a year-to-year proposition at running back in the league anyway. Sure, would I love the idea of having a nice young, like, wow, look at this kid. He's going to be good. He's under rookie contract for several years. That would be a great idea. If they come out of this draft and have a young guy they like early on, and you're like, that guy's pretty good, and he's going to be on this roster for a while, that's a nice thing. But I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm not going to worry about it that much throughout the year about what 2020 running back looks like. It's not a position to me that you have to bring in and develop over a year time period.
So how many more mock drafts do you have in you?
I'll be doing one this week, and I'll do at least one more. Probably that might be it, but I got two more, but maybe three, depending on if any trades or anything happen. The last one usually drops on the day of the draft, which is a week from Thursday.
Have you been keeping up on the visits here at all?
Like, Metcalf today, right?
Yeah, actually, you know what? Ryan Talbot over at New York Upstate, I always give him a little plug because he, to me, does really good job of keeping track and he puts some stuff out there and I'll kind of piggyback on some stuff that he's got out there. He does a good job. He's one of the guys in the media that covers the team. So he does a good job, and I'll, you know, gladly say, you know, I get a lot of the information on who's coming in visits from him.
Okay. Metcalf, I saw last week while I was out. On Thursday and Friday, I saw him tweet a picture of himself in a Bills t-shirt or something. So I don't know if that meant that he'd been here already then. So I was just curious.
He had come in already.
Okay, right.
He had come in already. He was in last week at some point. I think they had a couple receivers in that particular day. I think it might have been A.J. Brown in the same day as him. I'm not positive. N'Keal Harry's been in. This is according to Ryan and Debo Samuel as well.
Okay.
So, Ed Oliver, like, I want to know if the Bills love him as much as so many people tell me they should. Do you think my read of that, like how popular a pick he would be, you know, to people who pay attention to the linemen and stuff, like in this case, that's probably what you'd want or need to do. Would you guess that the Bills' interest in him is, you know, commensurate?
Yes, I would think so, and I think it needs to be. This is the exact type of player that they need. We were just talking about the glaring holes. If you want to say that a penetrating three-technique defensive lineman, a guy that can really play in the interior and, you know, be different than the Star Lotulelei, not the two-gap controller and the guy that's going to, you know, tie up players, if you want somebody that's going to be motor running, getting to the quarterback possibly, moving sideline to sideline, that's Ed Oliver. And I look, there are question marks with every guy in some way, and his question marks are his size. He is not that big. He is a light. He's lighter than 280. He's not going to play in the NFL at 280. He was a little bit over that at his pro day, but he's not going to maintain that weight. And he's going to play 270 to 275 most likely. His arms aren't that long. You know, there are little technical things that you think about, and maybe that's going to wear on him a little bit, being a little bit lighter. But you know what? He is the exact player they need, and the way he plays, he's not going to play 100% of the snaps anyway in this defense, so let him go out there for 60% of the snaps and just do what he does.
Do you think that you have a decent read on whether or not they would be more likely to move up or move down in this draft, Sal?
Well, I would say move down more likely, but I'm way more open to the idea of moving up than I ever have been because of free agency and things that have happened. I feel like if there is a guy there that they really believe can come in and be a major impact player, and that doesn't even have to be on defense. It can be on offense too, but probably on defense considering the way this draft is. I'm talking about a Bosa or a Josh Allen guy like that. If they feel like that guy starts to slip and they need to go get him, I would not discount the possibility. But, I mean, just by nature of where they are at number 9 and what it would cost to move up versus what you could get and gain by moving down, and the fact that, you know, they can still add more picks and guys later on, it would make more sense and more likely to move down.
What about Quinnen Williams?
Best player in the draft. He's really, really good. And, yep, I could see him being one of those guys I just mentioned. Here's the problem I have with it. I internally wrestle with, is it really ever worth it to move up for an interior defensive lineman? I mean, you move up for quarterbacks, and you might move up for edge rushers because they get to the quarterback. The Bills moved up for a wide receiver in 2014, and that was not the right play. We all know that now, right? As much as I love Sammy, I was a big Sammy fan coming out of college and said, yeah, he's going to be a stud. Hasn't worked out that way in his career, but I'll tell you this. You move up in the draft, to me, especially if you're going to go into the top 5 or 6 or whatever it's going to take, I don't care how good Quinnen Williams is. That's tough for me to reconcile that position to do that for.
They also did it for Zay Jones in the second round 2 years ago, trading up for him. So did you cry watching Tiger?
I was choked up. I screamed a few times. It was cool. I was in the car. We had to do some shopping, and my wife said to me, do you want me to drive so you can watch on your phone? I said yes. And so we pull in. We go to a store. She says, I'm going to run in. I'm sitting in the car. Max is behind me. He hits the shot on 16. It starts rolling, and I'm watching, and I'm screaming, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then it lands, and it stops, and I go, yes. And Max goes, what's wrong? And I right. said, nothing, buddy. I said, Tiger just hit this amazing shot. And then she gets back in the car. He's still on 16. He's about to put it out. And I said to her, I want this so bad for him. And she said, so do I. And I heard your discussion earlier, Mike, and you have a great question about what it means. And I thought about this for me. So if I may, I'll give my answer, what it meant for me. Mm-hmm. And my answer is, it's not about Tiger the Redemption. It's about golf for me. Tiger represents for me a sport that I've grown to love being super exciting and everybody else wanting to watch and like it and jump on that bandwagon. And that was awesome when he was doing that, and Sundays were must watch. And then that just kind of went away. And as much as even I like golf, even I didn't watch on Sundays that much over the last 10 years. But now, when him doing that, I say, what is it going to be like for the PGA? What's it going to be like for the Open this year? And so many more people now might like golf and respect it and love it, and I think that's cool.
I like that point. Yeah. Beth Page, by the way, for the PGA in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have to admit that prior to like just recently, certainly yesterday, but even before that, I think all of that is right, Sal, and I think that I was even 10 years ago older, acting older, I was grouchy about that. Like, why do you need this guy to get excited for golf? Like, I like golf. I'm still going to watch the majors. I mean, I don't, even with Tiger in his heyday, I didn't watch the Shell Houston Open or whatever. I watch these four tournaments every year and, you know, pick and choose some other stuff. But it's almost never predicated on who's on the leaderboard. Like, those are tournaments that matter to me. They're historic. So I think up until yesterday, I sort of took some of that out on Woods, that he was so popular that it sort of made me mad. Like, it's a gimmick. You need something to get you to like golf. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Like what you like. And if this makes more people like something that I think is pretty cool, then I've grown over the years to just sort of accept that and keep moving instead of holding it against maybe the pop culture icon that is responsible for it.
Yeah, he's just super exciting in so many ways to watch, and it just was really cool to see that again. And again, I keep thinking, what's the rest of this year going to be like? And that's when I really kind of start to get excited about what happened yesterday.
Thank you, Sal.
You're welcome.
There you go, Sal on the Wester Hotline with us, and his appearance again brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Just typed in on a Google search the words, how old? They wanted to know how old his kids are, and the first option is, how old are Tiger Woods' children? That's the first thing
really
that came up after I typed in the words, how old? Then it's, how old is Tiger Woods? How old is Tom Brady? How old is Vanna White? And how old is Notre Dame? Those were the five choices. They know that, Google. Did I type something in about Vanna White, or like would you get that option too?
I don't know.
We were talking about her. I made a comment that raised eyebrows in my house over the weekend I was watching something and Wheel of Fortune came on after. And Wheel of Fortune was on. I said, there aren't 100 people in the world who could beat me at this game. So we talked about that for a while. We talked about, and then the puzzle came up and they put the T and the E in the, and the E from the last word. And I'm like, the Royal Palace. And that was it. And like my wife got up and it was like kind of a cool thing. So we were talking about Wheel of Fortune. And I might have typed in Vanna White, but if you went to your phone, would that come up as one of the five things that they would think you're going to ask? How old is Vanna White?
Now I got to try.
I think it's got to be some sort of mix, because I just went to Google and typed in how old is, but the first thing I got was Jaromir Jagr. But way down the list, there is how old is Vanna White.
So it made the list. Even with all of Joe's hockey searches, it made the list.
Yep.
Are you doing this now?
Yeah. How old? I got how old is, and Tom Brady, Vanna White, Donald Trump are the three that I got.
How about that?
Vanna White.
Everybody wants to know how old Vanna White is,
yep.
It turns out. Apparently a lot of people are asking that question.
Wow.
Tiger, Bills, Sabres, Coach Watch, all of it. The playoffs. There's a lot to say about the playoffs so far. We got suspensions, and we've got a massive upset on the brink of one, at least, with Tampa Bay down 3-0. 803-0550 for us, Mike Shope and the Bulldog. This is WGR.
Yeah, I mean, I think let's just take example. Let's say it's the third round. Okay, let's say, what pick do we have? We're like pick 74, I think. So if we're in the third round and we're getting close to our pick, and let's say we're 5-6 away, and we've got a guy rated high in the second round, and he's sticking out like a sore thumb, and we've done our due diligence. Our board is telling us, let's try and go get this guy.
Bills GM Brandon Bean, the Bisons game we were just talking about has been postponed. Weather, so they'll have to wait to end that losing streak. Vlad Guerrero is with them. He's hitting. And Toronto is starting to talk like, big surprise. You know, he's doing well. We could see him up here pretty soon.
Right.
Should be at least another week before Guerrero goes up there. Hopefully he gets some games in Buffalo before he goes.
Right.
I guess. I mean, Toronto's really bad. Really bad. AL East. Right now, the Orioles, who won in Boston today, are ahead of the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Sox are now 6-11, and they'll play at the Yankees in a series starting tomorrow. The Yankees are 6-9, and they have lots of injuries, the Yankees. Sanchez is another one now, Betances, Severino, Stanton. They've got big injuries. Andujar. And there are the Rays. Best record in the majors, best run differential in the majors. They're killing teams. They're 12-4, so that's what? 5.5 ahead of the Yankees and 6.5 ahead of Boston. Still so early, but it should be worth something. Tampa won more than 90 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
They're nice. And if they are on track for, let's say, 95, that's a really good year. Let's say 95, then Boston had better get going pretty soon.
Yeah, they better get going.
Because 100's a great year.
I'm not like at... I'm still at it's early, but that, you know, you would set them run out of that pretty soon. And they're not just looting. Like, they're like getting clobbered.
You're 10% of the way in right now.
Like, they can't pitch. Just getting Baltimore put 8 up on them again today. It's not.
Velasquez today.
Looking kind of messy there, but, you know, it's still early. It's just Patriots Day. The marathon was today.
Right now, though, like, I might, even money, either the Red Sox or the Yankees miss the playoffs. What kind of bet does that sound like? One of them miss for even money. Would you do it?
I don't think I would do it for even money. There's so much there, and it's still, you know, we're 2 weeks in. So mm-hmm. I could be bought. You know, I don't think it would take a ton as far as odds go, but those two teams still are just stacked.
I might do it. I might make that bet.
I'll take it.
The Yankee problems, like, those guys will probably all come back. But, you know, in the case of the pitchers, it might be a long time. They should – I'd be more optimistic for them than Boston.
Yeah.
But, you know, Boston is still good. You need one other team that's not a first place team in the American League to beat them both.
Right.
Or to beat one of them. And that could be the Mariners. That could be the Twins. That could be Oakland, I guess. It's not going to be Toronto or Baltimore. It's not going to be probably not going to be Detroit. It's not going to be the Royals. It's not going to be the White Sox. It's probably not Texas. It's probably not Anaheim. So Seattle, Houston's great. Cleveland should be okay. I mean, their pitching is great. Actually, it's actually not. Cleveland. Kluber's getting hit. Carrasco had a terrible game. Anyway, Joe, that is baseball we're talking about right there. And did we make a bet just now? I'm not sure. I'm thinking about it.
Wait, which side are you on here?
I'm intrigued by no, because, like, you hear me. I am big on Tampa. I'm always big on Tampa. They never get their love. And, like, it's a good team that got better and is having a killer start. So I want to bet that either the Yankees or the Red Sox miss. I'm not sure how much it is to really bet that. Like, I'm not sure how much that is to really predict with the problems that those two teams have so far. Like, Sale pitches tomorrow.
Right, and if he's throwing 88-mile-an-hour floaters again.
Pitching-wise, you are David Price, and that's it.
I'm going to be
starting pitching right now.
If he throws like that again tomorrow, I'm going to be waiting for, like, immediately after the game, he's getting shut down. Like, that's if that's what it looks like again, I just can't. It's not effective. I mean, what are you doing? There's got to be something wrong with him.
I will do this right now, Joe, with you.
I think we're on the same side, though.
You're on the no?
I want the side where if one of them misses, I win.
Me too. Me too.
Okay.
All
right, now I want to bet you both.
You do?
I'm in.
You just got money. I just gave you money. You made a whole speech about how you never have cash. Now you have it. Get rid of it. Sell it. Spend it. Gamble. That's what you should do. Everybody who cares about you would tell you that.
Of course they would. Look at that. My wife's listening. She just texted me and said, bet. Go ahead. Do it.
Go ahead and bet. I just want to know, like, what the real odds should be on that. I lost the golf bet. But I enjoyed it. I don't feel like I got cheated. I don't feel that I, you know, Molinari the whole weekend for me was, with respect to that bet, I had to go and change the format. Because Molinari would have been one of my seven. Like, that guy was among the seven favorites, and or top 10 favorites anyway. So was Tiger. And we changed the format a little bit to make it, to sort of tempt you to go outside.
I love, I wasn't the one, well, I mean, I had, whatever, I had money at stake here. I love the format adjustment.
You like it?
Yeah, because
we made it a little bit more interesting.
I forgot, you know, I was under the weather when the thing started, so but I watched a lot of it on Thursday and Friday. And I mean, what's better to, you know, when you're just sick, just lay on the couch and watch golf. It's perfect, you know. So it's really actually relaxing. So I think Saturday, by the time I got around to watching it, obviously I was here when you picked Shoffley. I forgot that you had him.
Mm.
So at some point, like I went to check a tweet and I saw not only did you have him, but he's at the $100 level and like he's around, and it just got a lot more interesting to me on set. When I realized, I was like, ooh, like that's awesome. And whereas like Dustin Johnson on $25.
Right.
He had never really scared me, you know. He seemed
they barely showed him.
I know, like yesterday when they finally did show him and he was within a shot or two, I had forgotten about him even being around.
Yeah. Well, I was watching him because he was one of mine, so I was not forgetting about him. But I do think it was interesting that like he never came up until maybe half an hour left or 45 minutes left.
It was late when it became possible to me that he could win.
And that's also, you know, in their defense, I guess, there were so many threats. There were so many players around the lead the whole tournament. Everybody kind of had the same tournament. They all were just like 3-under, 6-under, 9-under, 12-under. Like all those guys were kind of all – nobody. Saturday I watched it, I could not find a bogey. I watched that thing for 2 hours on Saturday. I feel like I never saw anybody make a bogey. And, you know, Johnson crept up. It was his back nine on Sunday that got him to one back. I mean, he was one back after all that. But it's a great tournament. And Tiger winning, holy cow. I can't believe how – I got to explain this. Like, I can't believe how big a deal it was. I understand why it's a big deal. But if you had told me before this – that if Tiger Woods wins again, it would just be this colossal sports achievement that you would cry watching it, that it would be at least what Nicklaus in 86 was. Like, I just would have argued against all of that. I would have thought, well, it's okay. But it was longer than I realized between his Masters wins. And he just came off so genuine and everything at the end. Like, I found myself just totally buying the guy had this, you know, I remembered about the injuries, they're making that point, and just how far away he was from that. And, you know, I just never really was thinking like that. And so I'm not saying I was right. I'm saying I really should have realized or appreciated what that story would be.
Yeah.
And then was.
I was bracing for it to be overblown and probably, I'll admit, somewhat resentful of that. And then it started happening and I was just like, I got on the big roller coaster at Cedar Point and they put the harness down and I went, okay, good, I'm in. And I just rode it and I put my hands up and I had a great time. Like, I did not, it completely disarmed me from any previous whatever I had on Tiger Woods. I just never really rooted for him. I loved him yesterday. I loved it. I loved the whole thing. It was a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, me and Brian had talked about a while ago and agreed that we thought him going through everything he went through and then winning another major would have been a bigger story had he not gone through all his struggles and just broke Nicklaus's record way back when.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
And like he's got a different image now. He's like I don't know what he's really like. I'm not saying anything about what he's really like, but we talked about this a lot in the first hour, that the way he played and the way he just killed it and was just so fierce and sometimes seemingly bitter and just like a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And like yesterday, he was really stoic the whole day or the whole week, except for that gum. He's just chewing on that gum the whole week. Like, didn't give you any look into how he was feeling. And then when he won, like, it all came out. The ecstasy on the green, the joy with his family. Wow. I mean, it was such a great thing to watch. You know, sports. Like, how about sports yesterday? That's right. Big win. 803-0550 is our number. We'll have more on Tiger, the Sabres, and the NHL playoffs as well. And the Bills were at work today. We'll have more to say about that as well as we go. The draft is next weekend. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, with lines open. This is WGR.
Yeah, I got a buddy with a grandpa that's going through the same thing. He can't really see very well because he's getting old. So he'll get some glasses or something. I don't know. If he gets suspended, it's going to be hard for him to see up top.
Ryan Reeves on Joe Thornton. Thornton looking at a suspension, you think?
Yeah.
For a game, at least?
Yeah, yeah.
Vegas leads 2-1
and
there?
I guess
or is it 1-1?
No, it's 2-1. Vegas has won the last two. San Jose won game one.
Yep.
The backstory on that is Reeves and Kane got in a fight yesterday, and I guess Thornton said something to the effect of, I wonder what it feels for like for Reeves to get beat up by a 30-goal scorer or something to that effect. So that's why he said that he can't see real well. He's all, because I would be hard-pressed to tell you who won the fight. But anyway, Thornton, I guess, asserted that Kane handled him, and Reeves is saying no way.
When did the Leafs get to find out whether Kadri is suspended? Were they just assuming he is for this game and go from there?
They are. In fact, I mean, they skated today with Nylander at center to take his spot at center, and I think they're definitely assuming he's not going to play tonight. The hearing was supposed to be at 1 o'clock, so I'm a little surprised that we haven't heard anything yet. I mean, I can't remember how long those things usually are, but, I mean, holy cow, it's 4 hours now.
Yeah, 16 minutes ago, Chris Johnson said that still no decision rendered on Kadri.
How long do you need to have a hearing go? You don't even need the hearing at all, do you?
Not really.
What do you need to hear from him for?
Yeah.
Did you do this? Yes.
Did you mean to? Obviously.
What's the right answer?
Do you regret it? No. Okay, you're suspended. Like, you probably lie about the part that you don't regret it to try to get a more lenient sentence. But
you might want to play it like Morgan Freeman in Shawshank, where you just, like, for years you just say how sorry you are, and then you realize that doesn't work. So then one of these times you just go in there and be like, you know,
whatever.
You make your decisions.
Did you see the guy blast me in the knee with his knee? What? What do you want from me?
I mean, they got 2 hours, and then I'd assume he's allowed to play. If there's no decision by then, I think.
Right.
Maybe they would know. Well, they who knows? Like, they could just.
6:55, they just say he's suspended.
The Leafs could know that he won't be available to them tonight.
Right.
I'm sort of assuming that that's the case.
Yeah.
But
the question is whether he's gone for the rest of the series, really, is the big, I'd say, is the big question. He's definitely getting at least this game. I think he'll probably get the rest of the first round.
More proof again about what a great system they all have. This guy got suspended in last year's playoffs for a hit. And, you know, it was such a deterrent that they go all the way back to the playoffs and he does it again. Great. I mean, these suspensions, hockey people love to argue about them. I think it should have been 2 games. I would say 3, as if you're figuring anything out at all. This guy gets suspended in a playoff series, comes back the next year, whack. You're not fixing anything. You're just getting through the day.
Right.
What's the point? Why even talk about this? what are you figuring out? You're not figuring anything out. I do hope the Leafs win. I would rather see the Leafs win than Boston win. I got no use for Boston. I'd like to see if Tampa goes out.
We agree there.
This is big.
Yeah.
This is big. If Tampa goes out, it's all on the line here.
Yeah.
For the Leafs. And if they lose this series, it'll be like again, right? Matthews questions, I don't even know all of it.
Right.
This is a very big spot for them.
Yep.
If they do it, they could beat anybody. You beat Boston out, you take Boston out, you can win it.
And Tampa's out of your way.
Right.
Right.
Yep. You just go win it.
Yeah.
Wow, this is so big.
Yeah, I'll be up for that tonight. Home for Toronto tonight. They split on the road.
How do you get a team in that league? It seems like those fans are having so much fun, the playoff team fans. How do you get a team in that league?
There's a big fee for expansion, but then they set the table pretty nicely for you.
Apparently, you just go and win as soon as as long as you pay that fee, you're good.
Right. Vegas, Mark Stone, holy cow, 5-point night last night.
Yeah, they're almost the favorite with Tampa down. St. Louis or Vegas, you know, probably, maybe Washington. I don't know. I don't think so. 803-0550 is our number. Tiger, hockey, football, more. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.